Gotta be cool.
What the heck, Dan? Why are you such in a tizzy?
Well, it's our guest today, John K. Sampson, leader of the iconic band The Weaker Thans. He's going to be on our podcast today, and I still can't believe it.
Oh, man, you got to be cool, man. John, super chill. You're going to make him, like, really uncomfortable if you act like such a fan.
Yeah, I think you mean fanboy.
Yeah, fanboy. Wait, is that a Weaker Thans sweatshirt? And a Weaker Thans travel coffee mug. Man, you got to get rid of that stuff.
Okay, all right, just a sec. Here, yep, okay,
come got it on, off. Come right. on, you're still wearing a Weaker Thans t-shirt. Wait, what is that?
Is that a tattoo of John's head on your arm? Oh, man, he's going to think you're like a stalker.
Oh, listen, I'm sorry, guys, but I really am a diehard fan. I mean, for a guy who grew up in Toronto, I really didn't understand Winnipeg until I heard the Weaker Thans. Wait, I think he's here. Hey, John, welcome.
Hi, guys. It's a real pleasure to be here. Dan, that's a nice tattoo. Really, really captured me there. Perfect.
Thanks, John. It is a really nice tattoo.
The Winnipeg Free Press proudly presents, in partnership with CJNU 93.7 FM, Negan and the Lone Ranger. Here are your hosts, Negan Sinclair and Dan the Lone Ranger Lett.
Bonjour, greetings everybody. Welcome to another episode of the podcast, and I'm back.
Yeah, back in person. We couldn't be happier.
He's although, back. Now, happier meaning in scare quotations, really. No,
well, not quite in scare quotations, but I mean, we didn't stop having fun because you weren't here. Like, we still had fun, and yes, some of the fun was at your expense.
At my expense, yeah.
But I did, and it wasn't, it was a joke, but it wasn't a joke that I would now be known as the loneliest ranger because I was missing my trail mate. And
It was an adventure the past few days. I've been stuck in Vancouver, couldn't land in Winnipeg, but finally got here. And here we are in a very special episode that we've been waiting a long time to organize. And we have one of my very special friends, but colleagues and fellow activists, John K. Sampson, who's in the studio with us here. And we're going to talk all things Winnipeg. We're going to talk all thing budget. And maybe we're going to talk a little bit about the scariest topic ever to be featured on our podcast. The opening of Portage in Maine.
Yeah, no, it's there's a lot of people shaking in their boots, and but you know, we'll sort of get into that. Anyways, John, thank you so much. You know, it really is a pleasure to have you here.
Oh no, it's great to be here. I'm delighted to be here in the underground, the circus. I got lost on my way here. Maybe it'll be the last time. It's like I've been getting lost down here all my life.
I will say there is one thing that made me laugh a lot during the last series of major works on the concourse at Portage in Maine. They had barricades up around the Richardson building. There was fences up, and there was a sign from PCL Construction with an arrow that said, City of Winnipeg Underground Bunker. And I just thought, brilliant.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah,
so we are in the CJNU studios in the bowels of Winnipeg.
Indeed, the Richardson Concourse.
Surrounded by the shuffling feet.
Yes,
in the underground.
That's right.
And those, I mean, we have people who listen to this podcast from all across the world, we're very proud to say. So
still big in Hawaii.
We're still big overseas. Oh, and nice. For those of you that maybe don't know about the kind of local celebrity, national celebrity of John Kay, former or still musician doing great stuff with the Weaker Thans for a long time, a very popular national band here in Canada, and is really a person who's built a career on singing about, talking about, doing activism for Winnipeg and Manitoba and Canada. Some of the things you might have seen on social media was some of the stuff for Reggie Leach, trying to get him into the Hockey Hall of Fame, talking about the kind of beauty, but warts also of Winnipeg, and then now talking about the Millennium Library. But John, you've been doing a lot of things over the past few years, especially since the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people out there want to know, what have you been up to? What are things that you're doing now? And what is your work with the John Howard Society, which is some of the stuff that you've done most recently?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, since the pandemic, I guess, I got really super interested in weaving. So I've got a giant loom in my basement now, and I weave a lot. Wow. So that's been kind of awesome. my favorite thing to do. And
what comes out of the loom?
Like, I make a lot of scarves, and I've been selling them on the internet. I make banners for dogs.
Trying to figure out how do we get a hold of these things.
Before we do that, I'd like to know what a dog banner is. So go ahead.
So I make a little square on my loom, and then I embroider the dog's name into the banner, and then I tie it up with a dowel. It takes several hours to make anyway. And I've been giving them to a dog. I did it for an entire year. I called it Dog Friend Friday, where I would give a banner to a dog that I met. So that was my big project for 2022.
That's more productive than almost anybody I know in the pandemic. Yeah.
So this allows the dog to hang his or her shingle at home.
That's right.
This is.
So people often place it near where the dog eats, or if the dog is, I've done several memorial banners. So if the dog is no longer with us, so that's been a big project.
I would have assumed it would have been at the front door to show ownership of the house.
It's true.
No, but I think it's a brilliant idea. I'm going to go out on a limb and say you've probably not only invented but cornered the market on this thing,
banners.
This product. So.
Thank you.
You know, respect.
Thank you very much.
Art is art. I mean, and you've been an artist for a long time. Hmm. And not just that, you know, doing art, but also supporting artists. Your long work with Arbiter Ring Press and Cards on the Table. One of the books that you published was one of my books on Idle No More a number of years ago.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
But tell me some of the things that you're doing now. I mean, people are probably going to ask the number one question of, are you still doing music? Are you planning anything in the future? People want to probably know that.
Sure. I'm not really planning anything. Yeah, I've put out a little 3-song EP last year on June 1st, which was fun. It was the 10-year anniversary of being sober, so I thought I would do a little 3-song thing, and it came out on Bandcamp. And I've been doing that under a kind of moniker, Vivat Virtute, which is kind of our family craft concern. I've been doing that, and I don't have any plans. I haven't performed in a long time, and I feel like I'm stepping back from the music world, and have been for a long time. So I got a really cool job just at the beginning of the pandemic, teaching creative writing at Stony Mountain Institution, so through the Walls to Bridges program at the University of Winnipeg. So I've been going out there for 4 years now, teaching a university creative writing course to incarcerated folks there, and that kind of was a culmination of a lot of stuff I'd been doing at prisons. I helped start a book club out at Stony, and I've done various stuff like that. So I've been really focused on that for I guess like 4 years now, and then I recently got a job as the literacy instructor at the John Howard Society. So that's just down on Ellis there. And they work with people who are either incarcerated or who have been. And I go into Remand Center downtown here and do 2 literacy classes a week and I bring volunteers in, and, volunteers are actual trained teachers, so they know what they're doing, and it's great. So I really love that work. That's kind of filled up my days, and then like working on the library activism around the library takes up a lot of my time and has for like 6 years now. So those are kind of what I've been up to.
So the library activism, and I'm not suggesting that you were not a passionate patron of the Winnipeg Library system, but you actually had a really great experience where you and your partner, Christine, got to be writers in residence.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a program that's near and dear to my heart because my lovely wife, who's made me promise I wouldn't mention her actual name, but she used to coordinate the writer in residence program. It's a fantastic thing
that
not enough people know about. But how did you, because you were in book publishing, you are a writer in essence. How did you sort of had that? How did that get on your radar? And what was the experience like?
It was great. Yeah, I knew lots of writers who'd done it before, and Christine and I had just done it at U of M at the Center for
Creative Writing and Oral Cultures.
Creative Writing and Oral Cultures, which was a great experience. So we were there. Christine and I often do things like this together, lead songwriting workshops and do writing things. So we had done that and then we'd heard, that the library had one too. And, we applied and got the gig. It was 2016, 2017. And it was incredible. It really made me reorient Winnipeg towards the Millennium Library in a lot of ways. Cause we had an office on the second floor and we had candy that we gave out to people. And, so many writers came through our door. Just so many incredible writers, just an incredible tapestry of Winnipeg. And, it was really beautiful, a beautiful experience. And I've been going to the Centennial Library and then the Millennium Library for my entire life. And, I guess that experience of being writer in residence really drove home how important the Winnipeg library system is to me and to Winnipeg. I really feel like it's the place that, I'm trying to think of, I have strong feelings. So I feel like it's also the place where I think it can be sort of a microcosm of Winnipeg, and it can also be an example of what we want Winnipeg to be. Mm. So I feel like it's really important. And also you can learn a lot about people from how they feel about libraries. So I'm thinking especially of politicians. Yeah. So I think that if you understand what someone thinks about a library, you'll understand what they think about the world.
Now, people sometimes talk about Port-au-Germain as being the heart of Winnipeg,
but right. Yeah.
I think it would be fair to say that the Millennium Library is more like the soul.
I think you're right. Yeah. I do feel like it's the most important intersection in Winnipeg because it's like where we all actually kind of come together and sit together. And there's, it's the last place where we can sit without buying anything together, really.
I think the, truth be told, and I've already revealed part of this, but, my wife worked for many, many years for the Winnipeg Library Service at Millennium.
Yeah.
And the thing about Millennium Library, and I want to get to Millennium for All in just a minute, if you really want to know what a modern downtown headquarter library is about in any city, really, in the world, but particularly in North America, that song really, really just grabbed it by the throat, I thought, and laid it all out. But it's the, there have been instances of violence, because it is a truly open space.
Right.
You can't always account for, the people that come in there. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, too, my wife was the one who told me that recently when we started to get, inundated with new, residents from Ukraine, new Canadians from Ukraine and from, Eastern and North Africa, the settlement agencies actually send the people to Millennium to, print government documents out that they need to fill out to apply for healthcare and things, to learn how the city works, to find out where to go to solve problems. They actually send them to Millennium. Mm-hmm. So the library, I think, and I'm sure you had this sense before, but it's an amazing public service that has actually, it organically adjusts to what people need in a structure where everything else the city does is pretty much what city council wants to do. But at the library, they do what people want to do. I don't know if that's a fair comment.
That resonates with me. Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think that that's really true. And yeah, I feel like even the work I do at John Howard, I'm often sending people to Millennium to do stuff. It's a real resource for everyone, right? And I do feel like, yeah, I think the key to the safety issue is staffing. There's just not enough librarians. And we really need to address the core issues of Winnipeg. You can't just isolate it within the library because it's so much broader, right? So, yeah.
So Millennium for All. So you wrote a song to draw attention to the lack of attention, really, the city was paying to security at Millennium. And what it really is, it's a very poetic roster, like an accounting of all the different people who visit the library and what they do.
Right.
And you don't pull punches about some of the problems that come into the library. But what's the synthesized message? Like, what were you really trying to tell the city through that song?
That our ideas of traditional libraries are false and they don't exist, and that's it's a dog whistle, it's a racist dog whistle that is used. You'll hear it whenever someone wants to limit who can come into the library, right? So I wanted to really capture. It was actually an interesting. It's never happened to me before, but I was helping like three academics, four, I guess, of us were working on like an academic response to the securitization at the library. So the introduction of the airport style security, which we were very much opposed to. So, they were developing this, academic kind of response to it, which was beautiful, and I was helping them edit it. And then one of them, Bronwyn Dobchuk Land, said, "Why don't you write a song about it?" And I was like, "Hi, I don't know how I would do that." And then it kind of came out of that, out of what they were writing about all the people who go to that place. So yeah, so it was it's basically a list. It's kind of that's my MO. You write a list and then you turn it into a song.
Well, you've given away the secret sauce.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's my only advice to songwriters. So yeah, it's a kind of list of everyone you would encounter at the library and what they're doing there, right? So yeah, I've had some like people question, there's a line in there that goes, "This is where we medicate in bathroom stalls," right? And I thought that was important because there's a real fear of people who use drugs in our city. And until we have a safe injection site and a safe supply, we have to expect people to use drugs in the library.
And there's a lot of naloxone administered at the library.
Well, the securitization of the library predated the song and, of course, was the impetus for many of the songs or many of the parts of the song that go in. And the metal, what we're really talking about is metal detectors.
Yeah.
We're talking about, for those of you that aren't part of Winnipeg, like searches, bag searches, and weirdly enough, not lockers. So even if you bring a bag, somehow you've got to go put it somewhere. Which brings me to the real issue of your song comes out February of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Pandemic hits March of 2020.
Right.
I'm doing Mama Bear Clan 2 to 3 times a week, and I did it for the entire pandemic. But I can tell you that I can draw you a direct line from the amount of needles that we picked up on the street between February 2020, when the song comes out, and March 2020, when the library closed as a result of the pandemic, and basically the entire downtown closed. The closing of bathrooms and is what you were just mentioning a second ago, was one of the most traumatic events that the city downtown and is really very rarely ever talked about. And I know that from specifically the picking up of needles. We saw a tenfold increase in the amount of needle pickup in just about a 2-week span.
Wow.
And it, the closing of the library was a life and death issue for people in the downtown core.
Yeah.
Because it's not just about immigrants and newcomers, but it's also about the fact that for people who are living downtown and people who are often classified as homeless, but are really experiencing homelessness, the library is the only ticket to reaching their families, to being able to access services.
Mm-hmm. Or just get out of the weather.
Or to use a bathroom. And use that's really what I wanted to say is that that the closing, like the library is so much more than just a place to read. It is a life and death service. And you're right. It is the one place that you can go safely where you're not going to be harassed for not buying something.
No, absolutely. I feel like that's super interesting to hear that. Because, I remember when we were starting Millennium for All and met with city officials about it. One of the things they showed us were confiscated needles, right? They showed us a picture of confiscated needles, but they were clean needles. And they were expecting us to be persuaded by this, that this was shocking, right? Of course, like, that's great that people have clean needles, right? So it's very, I do feel like it's very short-sighted and it's very like the idea of limiting who can come into the library, right? And safety, like I'm really inspired by the community safety hosts that are starting to move into the libraries. I think that's an amazing project where they take, people who are often people who are coming out of foster care or the system and train them as both security guards. They get the 40 hours of training as a security guard, which is all you need to be a security guard. And they get 160 hours of cultural training and
escalation training
and all that stuff. And the simple fact is that kind of response and just having a fully staffed library is so important, right? So just like, I know that we hear from library workers who are just scrambling to keep libraries open because they don't have enough staff, right? So,
I mean, that brings us to when they introduced the security measures, which came after a number of incidents, violent incidents that had happened in the library and some legitimate expressions from staff that they were worried about their safety.
Sure.
The word that's often used is interim measures.
Right.
And that is always, if anybody ever hears the term interim measures, by the way, that is a buzzword that suggests they're just warming you up for permanent measures. And so what has become an interim or what was introduced as an interim measure is now a permanent measure at the library, the metal detectors and so on. And we saw in the city budget this past month, $7 million dedicated to city libraries and $1.8 million, so a quarter of that, is going to increased security.
Which hasn't been defined yet.
Yeah, it hasn't been defined, right. Yeah.
But I mean, it's like interim measures. I think we know what it looks like.
No, we do.
And we can probably speculate and be fairly accurate. What are you doing now about it? And I know that you've been saying that you've been doing a lot of stuff now. I mean, we've been writing about the library. Dan's written a number of pieces about the city budget and kind of navigation. The time is running out for any changes, though. Yeah. It's just a few days away.
So we've been pressuring this week and for the last several weeks, we've been pressuring counselors. I met with my counselor. We've had people, we've done trainings every other Sunday with people from all over the city in every ward, to try and bring us all up to speed on how to talk to your counselor, how to make delegations. So we're getting ready for delegations next week. It's going to be late, but we're hoping to get amendments from some counselors. We haven't had any movement yet to especially just for the hours issue. To get the increased hours. So they're talking about increased hours and hours that are the same across the city.
While also recommending the closure of Millennium on Sundays.
That's exactly it. Yeah. So a friend of mine called it the Dunkin' Donut the other day. The idea that, that they're taking from, the Millennium to, staff and keep, suburban libraries open. So that's a really frightening thing, I think, because so many people use the Millennium on Sundays. We've canvassed there, and it's...
That would be the only day I was going there when I was growing up, because it was the day that one day my parents weren't working.
Yeah, and,
I think also people should know that out of that 7 million, there's only just under $500,000 dedicated to books.
Yes. So that's a huge thing, too, that when you speak to librarians, they're like, where's the collections budget? It's so small. And the technology budget, which people are more and more relying on, right? That's a huge thing. And, you know, this budget, I'm glad that there's a little bit more money, but we're still very much, like, very far last place in our comparator cities, which cities like Hamilton,
Edmonton, Calgary, is kind of the gold standard.
Edmonton, yeah. Regina beats us on every level when it comes to library funding. So, we're incredibly underfunded. It's like 30 or 40 years of austerity funding on our library. And it just seems like a symptom of that Winnipeg philosophy that we're not allowed to have nice things. That it's like, oh, other cities have a healthy library system. But
you'll just break it if we give one to you.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not getting
to
Portage and Maine yet.
Yeah, okay. No.
Well, but it is like, it's not just the general perception, but you mentioned the campaign to advise people on how to talk to politicians.
Yeah.
And indirectly, you know, I will consider myself a bit of an expert on how to speak to politicians.
Sure.
Because I'm giving them unwanted advice all the time. but there was a, and I won't mention the name of the city councilor, but the chair of the committee that oversees libraries made some comments about the future of community connections. So there is a little space in the lobby of the Millennium Library, which is kind of a one-stop shop for government services, basically. Mm-hmm. So everything from healthcare to social services, ID, particularly important for people who, you know, don't speak English and they don't understand how the system works. Sometimes it's just, and people in crisis.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just a granola bar, right? Sorry to interrupt, but I'm really passionate about this because I feel like this was something that we fought for really hard and it was introduced and then people immediately keep trying to take money away from it.
The comment made by the counselor was that he wasn't so sure that community connections was a good idea because they didn't want it to become to attract people in crisis. Yeah. And after I stopped screaming at my computer screen, I did write something about it.
Oh,
and
amazing.
You know, and just said, like, you know, if you think community connections is attracting people in crisis, then you really haven't been to the Millennium Library or, in fact, downtown, where people in crisis, you know.
Yeah. It's not about attracting people in crisis. I mean, Winnipeg downtown is in crisis and has been for a long time.
No, so that is just such... Like, that is such a profound admission of ignorance.
Yeah.
And outrageous. You know, honestly, I think my plan is I'm going to reach out to this guy after he forgives me for, you know, bitch slapping him the first time.
Right.
And say, like, look, you and me, we're going to go down and we're going to do a tour of the Millennium Library. And we're going to talk to all the people there. And then at the end of it, like, I won't report anything that gets said during that time. Yeah. But at the end of it, you and I are going to sit down and have a conversation about what it is you've culled from this experience. And, you know, I'm just going to really advise this particular council to accept my invitation because I don't deal well with disappointment.
Right. But I wish you luck. And I'm very happy that you're going to try that. I would say that this counselor, we've asked multiple constituents of his riding, of his ward, to meet with the constituents, and he's refused. He will not speak to anyone about the libraries, even people who live in his ward. So I'm discouraged by the kind of tone and tenor of, people that the mayor has chosen for executive policy committee. So we're getting in the weeds a little bit here.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is, you know, the people you hire, the people you place in power, that's a political and moral act. And, And these, I think, are people who do not have the best interests of Winnipeg.
Of all of Winnipeg.
Of all of Winnipeg. Yeah. So, it's troubling. And I do feel like this coming week will be instructive again. We do this every year. We delegate. Mm-hmm. We try and make libraries a priority for councillors. And so we'll see how it goes this year with the new shift in power.
One of the things that I think, and this does connect to some of the observations you've sort of made in your music. Mm. Because I think I'd related to you before we went on air that when I came back to Winnipeg in 97, mm-hmm. Like eventually Reconstruction Site became this amazing point of discussion among my friends, some of whom were not from Winnipeg and still trying to figure the place out,
right.
And some who'd been in Winnipeg their whole lives. But and in particular, one great city.
Mm.
So, I think most people who thought about the song have figured it out.
Right.
But it is interesting, and this is where it connects to the political dynamic, is that city councillors tend to avoid things that they think are unpopular with their constituents, even if they know it's the right thing.
Right.
And the problem on this issue, downtown and the Millennium Library, is that, far too many Winnipeggers are embarrassed by the downtown.
Yeah.
And, their solution is, I'd rather not hear about it.
I was going to say, just not talk about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Not talk about it.
Just drive through it.
Yeah. Right? So they would be.
Or go to a Jets game.
Yeah. Or go to a Jets. So they would be roughly the kind of people who they, quite frankly, do say they hate Winnipeg. They hate parts of Winnipeg.
Right, right.
Now, on the other hand, they fiercely defend their right to be the only people to hate Winnipeg. They don't want to let anybody else hate Winnipeg.
This is true. Yeah.
But that song does capture a real dynamic, a real politic that affects these decisions. Or am I overstating the...
No, I think that's true. Yeah, and like I was saying earlier, I feel like there's a real pessimism that anything can change here. I do feel like I've felt that my whole life, and I do feel like it's part of the character of politics here that we've been tricked into believing, right? just through years upon years of austerity and I do feel like I think it's time for a progressive slate finally at City Hall. There's certainly people talking about that now. So yeah, it's I do feel, yeah, I think you're right.
What do you think is the... Like, I think one of the challenges, of course, is that this is in certain corners of Winnipeg, not something that they're caring a lot about.
Right.
And I think for people who are downtown, people who work downtown, maybe they care a little bit more, maybe they're more interested in it. But generally, I mean, what we've been talking about is the work that you're doing now, work that we do, or the work that you do downtown. You're interacting with people who are using the library, who are often disenfranchised people, marginalized people, indigenous peoples, newcomers. And for some Winnipeggers, they may not be thinking about their fellow relatives or fellow people who are downtown, and they might be going, oh, those people, and why should I care about that issue? And what is it about the issue around the library, which has gained at least some public attention, that may be crossing lines? I mean, everybody has an interaction with the library.
Yeah.
But still hasn't quite gripped the public consciousness. I think generally people would say, I am in support of more metal detectors, more security guards, and absolutely they should close it whenever they want if they're nervous about safety. And if you brought up some of these things, they would get back to those people. Why should I worry about those people? They should just be working harder anyways.
Yeah.
Like, why is it that this issue hasn't gained a kind of citywide or consciousness, interest, engagement?
Right.
And maybe what might be a tipping point that would get people interested in it? Is it kind of that nostalgia for libraries? Is it sort of that? I mean, you said before that's a false narrative and kind of made up, that it isn't a place just for books. It's a place that saves people's lives.
Exactly. Yeah.
What's going to tip that Winnipeggers in, let's say, the outskirts or we call suburban? Like, that's what I'm interested in politically. And what would be the narrative that would be interesting to them?
I think that's a great question. And I think, again, the idea of relatives and neighbors, and it's philosophical, but I also feel like there's something psychological about it, right? For Winnipeg, yeah. Is that that again the library, the downtown library, is represents the downtown, right? So it's this microcosm of the downtown. So people don't want to look at that. So they don't want to look at the problems, and also for some reason the beauty. So like I think because if they look at the beauty, they have to look at the problems too, right? So I feel like it's again important for us to sit at that intersection and recognize that we're not isolated people, that we're part of a city, part of a community. And I don't know how to do that, but I feel like one of the things that we've been doing lately with Millennium for All and with Budget for All, which is kind of another group that we've been working with, is to really focus on every library in the city, right? So focus on the branches that people go to in the suburbs too, because they deserve to be healthy libraries as well. And they're not right now. They're understaffed.
They have some of the same problems.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So I feel like I feel like libraries, in my optimistic moments, libraries are where, all libraries are where we can sit and recognize the collective and recognize the connectedness we have with each other, right? So that's my hope, is that if we can lift all boats, all library boats together, that will have some kind of spillover into empathy and change for the city.
I love that answer, and it's a really nuanced answer, because it sort of tackles where people are and what they're thinking about, and particularly what their kids are engaging with. Because I mean, the best memories I have is going to the library as a kid. Mm. Like, that was really just a rich experience for me, and I don't think, you know, take technology, take all the phones, but this kid just loves to read. Like, the children just love to read. They bring you a book and you sit down with them in these places of the library. I remember being so excited to bring home books and being able to engage with that. I'm going to throw my answer to my own question. Please, in a very sort of that self-absorbed way. But
no, I'd be interested.
But it actually pivots to, I think, what is the an issue that just came up this month, reared its ugly head, as it were. Right now, today, we're taping this on International Women's Day. Mm-hmm. We all were coming to the CJNU studios. We're all late today because of there's a round dance happening, honoring murder, missing Indigenous women and girls, and of course the issue with women in the landfill, organized by the major Indigenous political groups in the city. It's an official event that they permitted the city. And so we're doing a round dance at the Portage in Maine, and then marching over to the ledge, and then doing some public awareness and speeches and so on. The reason I bring that up is because it's at Portage in Maine.
Right.
And what brings Winnipeg's interest and ire is that intersection.
Right.
And slowing down the work in that intersection, and having been, having been someone who organized those marches for years in the city.
Right,
I know that nothing makes Winnipeggers care more suddenly about particular issues and have opinions. Like, for instance, we would often do traffic slowdowns, not even traffic stops, slowdowns over the Wet'suwet'en issue around the Coastal GasLink pipeline.
Yeah, I think I was at.
And we were offering leaflets and we were offering information to people. So they understood that this was a national issue. Mm-hmm. Man, you get people who have deep opinions, and I don't think they really thought about the issue till about 10 minutes before we gave them the pamphlet.
They messed up their commute.
And so we talked a little bit about Portage in Maine as being this kind of intersection of the city, but the spiritual center, the spiritual intersection, as being the library. Do you think that these conversation of opening up Portage in Maine, and it will impact Winnipeggers, people are going to now have to wait at a light,
right?
And it will probably blow people's minds for a while. I mean, it already is blowing people's minds. It hasn't even happened yet. We did a whole podcast on this.
Wow.
Do you think the issue of Portage in Maine is something that could connect to this issue around libraries, or just what are your opinions on the opening up?
I hadn't thought of that. That's really good. I think there's a lot of parallels and a lot of deep pathologies that go into Portage in Maine.
There's some master degree thesis that could be written out of this.
Definitely. And I think about it a lot. I think you're right. I think that, I have this picture at home of Joe Zukin, the communist councillor for the North End, city councillor in 1977, I think, or whenever the barricades went up, and he's crawling over and walking. He did the first protest at Portage and Main, and it was about the barricades at Portage and Main. So he had a small group of people, and he took over the intersection. And it's a beautiful thought, and also incredibly depressing that was 1977.
Yeah.
And that everyone knew he was right, right? Like everyone, like if you think about it just for like 3 or 4 minutes, you know that that's an outrageously weird thing to do, to block off your central intersection.
And just those of you outside the city, if you don't know, I should have actually premised this a little bit. Right. For those of you that are listening outside of Winnipeg, the most iconic intersection in the downtown is basically barricaded off, and there's a downtown structure, which we are sitting in right now, mm-hmm. called the Concourse, or the Portage and Main Concourse. And it basically is an underground kind of mini city, underground, sending Winnipeggers downtown as opposed to being above ground and walking simply across the street.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like you would do in any other place in the world.
Those brutalist style is brutalist. Yes. No doubt about it.
That,
I'm sure that they had some concrete left over from the old public safety building and they decided to throw these things up. I think this is a story we've mentioned before, and we hope to be able to talk to him directly about it. But I used to be kind of at Portage and Main And then I got an opportunity a number of years ago at the News Cafe that the Free Press used to operate to do a live web interview with Naheed Nenshi,
who was then
the mayor of Calgary. And famous true story. So he's touring Winnipeg in town as Federation of Canadian Municipalities event. He's with Brian Bowman. They're doing a walking tour. Nenshi sees the barriers and does a Joe Zukin.
Right.
He hops over the barrier.
Wow.
To cross the road at grade. What Brian Bowman told me was suddenly there was a screech and tire smoke. And like he literally almost got pancaked crossing the intersection. But so I did this interview with him about, you know, all kinds of stuff. And then at the end I said, is there anything else you want to talk about? And he goes, yeah, why didn't you ask me about Portage and Main?
Because you're not supposed to.
What do you think about it?
It's not just shutting off the intersection, it's shutting off all conversations. Yeah.
So I said, okay, well, Mayor Nenshi, like, what are your thoughts on Portage and Main? And then he went into this rant about the barriers and his near-death experience.
Right.
And basically, at the end of it, I did say, you know, I don't know how important this is to you, but you've completely changed my mind.
Oh.
Like I am now completely and 100% have a new understanding after listening to you. So like it is okay. So the mayor of Winnipeg, Scott Gillingham, who was actually just on this podcast, he's one appearance short of getting his friends of the podcast status.
Oh, how do you get that?
Well, you got to do three.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
if you do a fourth, as we told the mayor, you get to guest host.
You get to just take the podcast over and do what you want with it. So we'll sit down with our phones afterwards. We'll book you in a couple more times. We talked to him about his decision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not an overly ideological man. He's kind of a nuts and bolts guy. Mm-hmm. And his decision to go public with this and basically drag council along with him. So I'm just wondering your take on it, because I think there may be a nugget of something hopeful in what he's doing.
Sure. I think I'm a little more cynical that I think it's, I think it's probably a money thing. So again, not to get too into the weeds here, but it's like it would cost $70 million to fix the concourse and fix the barricades. And I guess I'm glad, of course, but I'm also so mad about that. Several years ago there was a plebiscite. So people from all over Winnipeg, the suburbs included, got to vote on whether an intersection downtown Winnipeg would be opened or closed, right? Or stay closed. And it was an outrageous overreach of ideology and politics and just this strange brew of people who oppose the opening, who for the most part didn't live anywhere near the intersection. So, I'm still mad about that for sure. and I'm also like, so yeah, the I told you so's are not satisfying. I wish they were. Wish they were, but I'm just like, yeah, so it's money. Eventually it's money
that
wins the issue. And yeah. So I don't know where to go with that. What to kind of,
well,
what the metaphor is for that.
But yeah. Okay. So like I totally, cause I feel the same way, right? Yeah. Cause you know, I was one of the people that was hammering the drum all during the civic election in 2018 and saying, you know, this isn't about paying to take the barricades down. It's about paying to put them back up again. And all this work is coming and we don't know the full extent of the work that needs to be done. So we can't really vote on. And I even quoted, and I dredged this quote back up, but one of the property owners, the owner of 201 Portage Avenue, the company saying, you know, really, this is not the right time to be voting on this. Like, we don't have the right information. I am a little more satisfied with the, I told you so, because I think if this information had been known back in 2018, first of all, the sponsors of the plebiscite would have just shut up. Really? They would have realized that it was not, they didn't have a winning hand to play. You know, they said the intersection was too busy. It's the sixth busiest intersection in downtown Winnipeg. Said it was too large for, you know, too long for people to cross. It's the fourth largest intersection. They said, oh, well, you know, it's going to be so costly to take the barricades down, ignoring the fact that that really wasn't the equation. So the plebiscite was a sham.
It was a
bait and switch. I will say this about Mayor Gillingham. So he had all the information, did the analysis, and really on an issue that most people in politics think is entirely toxic. And he is a suburban. He was a suburban councillor. He basically just made the proclamation that the intersection was going to be open, and he dared anybody. So I will say, nothing is going to get rid of that resentment. But, doing the right thing eventually, it's
better than never doing it.
Dare I say this feels like a very Winnipeg thing. It's a problem that has what could be considered to be a somewhat obvious solution. And we decide to instead kick the can down the road until such a time as we reach the inevitable conclusion. Then wonder why it took so long.
That's right.
I have a thing that I do, I try to engage this issue, and I think it ties to Portage and Main, but I really learned it from you. And the years ago, when I was listening to One Great City, the famous song, and sort of feeling this trepidation around poverty and feeling this trepidation around the division in the city, the kind of have and have nots. And it was in the days of Idle No More. So I was just getting to know you and our relationship with different activists in the community and so on. And there's a famous line, of course, that you put in the end of the One Great City, which is our golden business boy will watch the North End die. And that idea of watching is one of the, I think, most pertinent things that leads us to paralysis or the lack of conversation or Portage and Main, which is really just about just putting everything underground, not talking about it. And it also brings us to this idea of the library, of people just go, what's this, the library? Or it's just a... When I do Mama Bear Clan and I'm dealing with people in North Point Douglas, one of the poorest intersections or poorest neighborhoods in this entire country, I always wave at everybody. I make sure that, and when we walk across Main Street, I make sure that I wave, and I keep waving until someone waves back. I constantly am waving to everybody. Because when they're driving through North Point Douglas, I want them to see what we are doing, which is helping our relatives, people from all across the city, from oftentimes Charleswood, Maples, Tanscona, coming to North Point Douglas and doing work with their relatives, showing kindness and generosity. And I ask everybody else, wave at everybody. Like, wave at everyone. That's and beautiful. When I'm, when I lead them on the walks, I say, make sure that they wave back. Mm-hmm. Keep waving until they wave back. And the reason that is not just to be a sort of friendly Winnipeg image, but mm-hmm. to say they got to do something. It's not just about watching.
Yeah.
It's not about driving through an area. And I think that's what Portage and Main is going to force people to do.
Yeah.
It's going to force them to pause and say, oh, now, like, here I am. Here I am in the downtown.
Yeah.
And I think looking at the library, which is a place that they'll be mm-hmm. having to spend a few extra seconds when they're driving from their commute or.
Yeah, thinking, but they're not.
Right.
No. But that's the whole point. Like, if you've driven through Portage in Maine.
Yeah.
And tried to, like, let's say, like, after today, like, I'll pull out in front of the Fairmont Hotel and I'll wait.
Right.
At the intersection. So I will wait for the north-south traffic on Main Street. Then I'll wait for mm-hmm. the eastbound traffic on Portage right. Avenue.
But there'll be people now there.
Yeah, there'll be people there.
Yeah, no, but
as opposed to nobody, which is concrete.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, for sure. Yeah, but yeah. I think, like, I've tried to imagine the pedestrian, you know, and it's like totally can work.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It, you know, there's so much if people time. See
the people who are downtown who are mostly disenfranchised, marginalized, often people experiencing homelessness. I think that's an impact.
Yeah,
I think that being able to see them, hiding the issue and as opposed to saying, oh, it's just a library.
Yeah.
And when you see and you interact, I mean, it's one thing to say when people come up and ask you for a few quarters on a corner somewhere, but when you see people living lives, then suddenly I think it breaks down barriers. It breaks down the ways.
It's the difference between an issue and a human.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I love that idea of waving till you get a response. Like, I think that's what we're all trying to do, right? I think on these issues is like, just show up as a human being for other human beings and respond. Respond with whatever you have, right? Yeah, I love that.
So, I mean, that's like, if there's any glass half full way of seeing in Portage in Maine, although it's been certainly a dark topic for us on the pod.
Well, we'll continue. We are continuing to try and get, and hopefully we'll get more investment in Millennium Library, which is an open space. Like, it's a space that welcomes everybody. And at the exact same time, for completely different reasons, we'll be closing the concourse underneath Portage and Main, which was not an open space and where people could not go and get out of the, elements because they would be rousted by security.
Yeah.
So I think that, the world works in mysterious ways and the, I think a lot of people in government at all levels do strive to identify and find ways of doing the right things. They get mm-hmm. derailed by a whole bunch of different things, sometimes outside of their control. Sometimes, quite frankly, people in government have to make incredibly hard decisions. Mm-hmm. You know, like right now, the city just announced yesterday that it's doing a major bump in funding, even beyond what was in the budget for shelters.
Right.
And like nobody who's concerned about all these issues could mistake that for anything other than a positive, like a necessary and positive thing. But for people balancing the numbers,
right.
Like they're looking at Millennium Library, they're looking at Portage and Main costs, they're looking at all these things are being assessed on the same plane.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah. And it, so the, I guess what I'm saying is the capacity to make the wrong decision mm-hmm. in, you know, as far as one community is concerned is really high.
Right.
And I'm not trying to make an excuse for them because it's just that, I do have some empathy for the fact that, you know, it's, there's almost no right decision. You know?
I guess. I think the right decision is to prioritize what we spend our budgets on, right? Like, so budget is a moral document. And in our budget, almost 30% of it goes to policing. And that's, in my mind, that's immoral. Yeah. And that, all these things we're talking about, all these funding problems can be solved. It just needs some bravery. And frankly, listening to people who have researched these things, right? We can't police ourselves out of these problems. We need actual investment in our communities, in our libraries, in our pools,
schools,
in our schools, in our transit, in all these things that actually make a difference for people's lives, right?
And I don't think people would draw that line that you know, investing in shelters is engaging issues involving some of those things, right?
Yeah. Because,
I mean, like a good example, it's like everybody would go, okay, it's fine to put in metal detectors because they're worried about weapons, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. And that was what the number one, that was the reasoning anyways. Mm. That's with a complete ignorance of understanding what life is like on the streets.
Sure.
And if you are a woman, and we are talking about on International Women's Day, if you are a woman on the streets, and if you don't carry a weapon, you are... It's not that you're asking for anything, but you are making yourself very vulnerable.
Sure.
And you, so if a woman wants to use the library and she's experiencing marginalization or maybe living in an encampment, you have to carry a weapon because that is a part of life. And then going into the library, now you've effectively cut off the library because not only you can't make it through the metal detector, but there's no locker for you.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so now you're never going to be able to reach your family. And so investing in a shelter, investing in services, that then helps elements of the library. But I also think the issue of metal detection might be reconsidered or even a locker.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And they had lockers for a while and then they took them away. But yeah, I totally agree. And there's so many reasons that someone would have a prohibited, I'm using scare quotes, item with them going into the library, right?
Like that have nothing to do with the library.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, a lot of people carry their houses on their backs, right? So you're going to have some items in there that other people don't need to take with them into the library, right? I don't need to take my kitchen with me everywhere. My cutlery, and some people do, right? So it's a real narrow understanding of how people live, right? Like the reality of how people live.
Well, and the curse of electoral politics is in fact the amount of courage and or like your capacity to do the right thing, which may be the unpopular thing, realizing that you are elected by people that have a very narrow view of the world.
Yes,
it's a blessing and a curse. For sure. It's been a fantastic conversation. And I know you said like that, you know, you're not planning anything big musically. I mean, you know, for me, I'm glad whenever I see those little like trickles of Bandcamp music and whatever. It's really cool. If you guys don't know what Bandcamp is, you really should, because it's like an amazing hub for, you know, musicians who really like, they don't want to make a big fuss. They just want to make music. Like a lot of covers, a lot of great covers.
Right.
But I would say I did want to raise one possibility. Like if you were to make some sort of return to performing, your constellation has, like you have crossed paths with Neil Young in the past, have you not?
I haven't actually.
You haven't?
No, I haven't. Okay. I've obsessed with him since my childhood, but I've never crossed paths.
So I don't really have any connections to So Neil Young and Crazy Horse,
incredibly,
are coming to town.
Amazing.
And so I will say in my house, we have had this dream of you and Neil Young doing a cover of Vampire Alberta.
Nice.
Okay. So, and maybe I'm wrong, but I thought you might be channeling a little.
Oh, yeah. No, that's directly. Yeah. I think the first line from his Vampire Blues is from Vampire.
Yeah.
So yeah, I have a version. So it's sort of, I guess it's a tribute. My song's called Vampire Alberta Blues and his song is called Vampire Blues.
Yeah.
So.
Listener, if you haven't heard Vampire Alberta,
and
you are a Neil Young fan, it'll honestly, you get a little weepy because it is that like wonderful twangy metal crazy horse, you know, guitar sound.
Yeah.
So anyway, Neil Young, if you're listening.
July 17th.
July 17th. We really, really like it if you would consider, you know.
Famously alumni of Caledon High School. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
July 17th, Blue Cross Park, formerly known as Shaw Park.
Bring him on the podcast. Why are we stopping now?
Listen, with our incredible worldwide reach, we're certainly going to, anyways.
Okay.
It's just an idea.
I'll try and relearn how to play guitar for that.
Day. It's like falling off a bike.
Is it? Yeah, no, you're right. It is. Yeah. I think I'm going to maybe play that Millennium for All song at our rally on Sunday.
Nice.
Sunday, this Sunday at noon, we're having a little art making and then a rally to save Sundays at Millennium.
And where are we? At the Millennium Library?
Yeah, in the lobby there.
Nice.
Yeah. My friend Kelly's going to play a couple songs. And
nice.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Awesome.
And very excited, not just for me seeing you again and mm-hmm. the work that you're doing to better the city and better the community, but I was aware that you're working with the John Howard Society. I have lots of relationships at Stony Mountain and the different, I forgot the name of it, prisons or the Walls for Bridges.
Walls to Bridges.
And that program, in fact, our department head in Indigenous Studies at the University of Manitoba, she's been heavily involved in that too.
Yeah,
she's also taught too. So Lorena Fontaine.
Lorena, yeah, right.
And just amazing work that program's doing. So for those of you that are wondering what John Kay's been up to, there you go. but also you can catch this activist event to come and help and support and engage the library downtown. I hope you come back.
Oh, me too. Yeah, no, that was really fun. I haven't.
Well, as soon as you, me too means you're committed. So I'll book you now.
Okay.
Yeah, and you apparently don't have any people to go through. Like we just went. Nope. So that's awesome.
Well, Nagan texted me. Yeah.
We wish it was always that easy, right?
No, for sure.
Yeah. So, well, thanks for coming. Big Miigwech, thanks. And for coming on the Negan and Lone Ranger podcast. You get both of us, not just the Lone Ranger.
Love it.